Yeah, working with Cam's been great. He's dialed in. He's learning the system well. He's super fiery, which is fun and is contagious. You're on the field and he's fired up to be there. He's fired up to go compete and try to beat the defense and try to score touchdowns. And I think that is super contagious to everybody in the huddle. It's fun to be around.
Welcome everyone to another episode, a second episode today of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, as always, the managing editor at TitanSize.com, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, and for the second time today, I'll say it, the yada yada king, Justin Mello. Justin, the Cam Ward, Carnell Tate connection is heating up at Titans OTAs. A largely uneventful practice, but we're going to start right here. I'm just going to put it on the screen, and this is what we are talking about today. A bunch of coaches spoke this morning. A bunch of players spoke after practice. We've got practice notes from all the Titans media members who are out there. We're going to run through and tell you what happened out there at the Titans' second open OTA practice of the spring. Justin, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Feeling spoiled to be called the Yada Yada King twice in the same day. What did I do to deserve this? What did Cam Ward do to deserve Carnell Tate in those 94th percentile hands as he hauls in that one-handed grab? Surely the play of the practice, one of the two best plays of the practice, if we're reading between the lines correctly. As you noted, didn't sound like a very eventful practice, but some things to run through for sure. And every single position coach spoke. Greg Lewis, not the wide receivers coach.
Right.
But we had quarterbacks coach, running back coach, tight ends coach, O-line coach, D-line coach, safeties coach, pretty much all of them. Linebackers coach, nickel coach, pretty much all of them spoke. I think one or two. I think Tony Oden didn't speak either. So I think it was just Oden and Greg Lewis that didn't speak.
I thought Tony Oden did speak, but you could
I thought
be
that
right
was
there.
Hillard, right? The nickel coach spoke, Hillard, and then we had the safeties coach, Marquand Manuel, spoke first too, right? So I didn't notice Tony Oden. I don't think Tony Oden spoke, but every position coach minus one or two. Of course, the coordinators didn't speak. A lot of players spoke. I listened to the players as well. Tony Pollard spoke. Cedric Gray spoke. Austin Schlotman spoke. Getting it right there on the first try. Kevin Winston Jr. spoke. I thought Kevin Winston Jr. probably had the best podium presser of the players. Yes, Cedric Gray, roster grids, notes. I was going to save it for later, but I'll just say it now. Fun thing Cedric Gray said, he called Carnell Tate the truth when they asked him about Carnell Tate. He said, yeah, he's the truth, essentially. So a lot of fun quotes, but I guess we'll start off with what actually happened at practice.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if Tony Oden spoke or not, because Buck Rising tweeted a clip that says, cornerback coach Tony Oden on Marcus Harris in year two. Was that actually... I think Dalton Hilliard and Tony Oden both spoke, Justin. I don't know if it's official or not, but I'm going to say it and we'll correct ourselves
later. I don't
think they
did. I think it was Marquand Manuel and Hillard.
Well, if you know, let us know in the live chat. But, I mean, Buck Rising should know the coaches that are at the podium because there's a PR guy off to the side who says, okay, coming to the podium, here's Tony Oden. But maybe not. Who knows? Let's go through some practice notes, then we'll talk about some quotes, some things that stood out from this morning, the press conferences that were live and ongoing while we were live, as position coach after position coach came to the podium, and then some players who spoke after practice. If anything stood out, we'll get to that. But I want to start with the headline of this episode and the headline of the day, which is the Cam Ward, Carnell Tate connection. Now, both guys meaning Cam and Carnell, maybe started practice a little slow. I read that Carnell Tate had one drop during position drills and two drops early in the team period, but he bounced back incredibly strong. It is a little bit of an eyebrow raiser when you hear the guy who had zero drops all of last season had three drops in like one half of one practice. I mean, this is the time of the year to get those drops out of your system, but it is what it is. He bounced back with two incredible catches. One of them we've already shown. I'll show it again. Why not? This is posted by Titans social media team, and just outstretching one hand, making this sideline catch over Micah Robinson in coverage and continuing to get upfield. Obviously no tackling out there, but it looks like he might have taken this all the way for a touchdown, for the pretty good for a guy who doesn't do well with yards after catch, according to the experts. But this catch, and then he reportedly made another contested grab in traffic later in this practice. Cam Ward, up and down day, no turnovers, which you love to see. Hit some beautiful passes like this one to Tate, which, I mean, this is really, if you're watching on YouTube, really outstanding coverage by Micah Robinson. But the ball placement is perfect. It's to where Tate can get it and Robinson can't. And the catch is incredible, obviously, one-handed, just reaching out and snagging it. Ward was reportedly, you know, threw behind on a couple passes of his intended target, was off a couple times. I read one of the beat writers out there noted that he felt like his process was rushed early on and said, I'm not sure why, maybe it's PTSD from last year, but clearly settled in as practice went along. And Justin, we can talk about this next point I'm about to bring up in a little bit after you react to this stuff, but it has come to my mind a couple of times. We talked about this last offseason when we were evaluating Ward as a prospect. I think it happened a few games last year. It happened a lot at Miami. And it happens a lot if you read closely these practice reports. Cam Ward starts kind of slow, and then he starts to heat up. And as he gets into a rhythm, he gets better and better as a day or a game goes along. We've seen that with all the comebacks he did at Miami, where he's down 20-something points and makes a comeback. But they are down 20-something points because he had either a turnover or just some missed passes early in the game. So an interesting thing, just I'm going to keeping my eye on this season, is if that's a pattern that develops. I'd rather my guys be better at the end of games than the beginning, because that's when games are really won and lost. So if I had to pick one, that's what I'd choose. But ideally, Ward will find a little bit more consistency over the course of a game, which should translate to the course of his season and then the course of his career, et cetera, et cetera. But more on that in a second. Let's talk Cam Ward to Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he also got better as the season went on as a rookie, right?
True.
Like it wasn't just early in games. He got better the later the year went on. Yeah, it sounded like I read that same tweet from, said he was slow with his process and missed a couple throws low, maybe the happy feet, as you mentioned, like things you don't necessarily want to hear, but it's practice. And that rep, it's OTAs in May, for crying out loud. That throw to Carnell Tate specifically, I'll say this, like, all these guys are Tennessee Titans, so I want to see all of them play well. I know we're excited about Cam Ward and the offense, but I like seeing that Micah Robinson had good coverage on that play. You and I have talked about Micah Robinson being an underrated potential guy to make this 53-man roster, right? Like, he came in late last year, claimed off waivers, or the practice squad it was, from the Packers, and played some all right football, especially in Week 18. And he's a guy that I've always been intrigued by. And I'm going to guess, if he's getting those reps against Carnell Tate, by the way, on the outside with Cam Ward making the throw to him, he's running with the ones. Now, Cordell Flott hasn't been out there, but still, it could be someone else other than Micah Robinson getting those reps, right?
So Joshua Williams.
Right? Like Joshua Williams. I think it's notable that Micah Robinson has that rep. So good rep in coverage, but like you said, even better ball placement from Cam Ward, putting it where only Carnell Tate can get it. And again, don't underestimate how big of a factor 94th percentile hands from Carnell Tate, being able to just reach out that right mitt and come down with it. Don't want to blow smoke. Like you said, he had a bad start to practice, it sounded like, right? A couple drops, uncharacteristic of him. Paul Kuharsky called one of them flat out bad. But he settled in, and as Iron Grids noted, I couldn't help but laugh in the chat. I remember when Jamar Chase had a problem with drops in rookie camp. I remember that too. Like, people were freaking out on Twitter with how many drop balls Jamar Chase was letting hit the ground at his rookie camp. So nothing to worry about whatsoever. But you like seeing a rep like this that could go viral and get us excited.
Justin, as we're recording live, Titans social team just dropped another Cam to Carnell connection, and we're playing it now on the show. Look at him going up again. Poor Micah Robinson. He's got the coverage that you would ask a guy to have. I mean, you literally can't cover a guy better than this, other than
this
to make a play.
This must be the contested grab everyone was talking about.
Of course, yeah. So this is the second of the two noted contesting grabs, clearly in a team period with the full offense and defense out there on the field. And look at Carnell, helmet catch, David Tyree alert, just going up there, snagging that thing. I mean, this guy, look, I'll tell you, as a Texas fan, week one of last season, Carnell Tate said, I'm here. I'm the next big Ohio State receiver. Jeremiah Smith, who, and went up and made an absolutely incredible contested catch against the Texas Longhorns for the Ohio State's first touchdown in that game. And, that's the kind of thing that he does. In Madden, there's a thing, I don't know if you remember this or know this, but there's a rating in Madden that is spectacular catch rating.
Yes.
Carnell Tate's got to be a 99 in spectacular catch rating. And the thing about it is that nobody on this Titans team was going out there and making a spectacular play for their quarterback last season. And now you bring in a rookie who one of his calling cards is the ability to go make a spectacular play, take a ball that, that's a good throw. We'll watch it again. That's a good throw that Cam Ward's making here. It's not like he's going up and saving a bad pass. But to make sure that this thing is caught, again, against tight contested coverage, it's such a weapon and such a cheat code for your offense to have somebody like that.
It does. I agree with everything. I'm just going to go back to Michael Robinson's going to walk off this field and ask if Cordell Flott wants to practice anytime soon, because he's probably going to get sick and tired of these Carnell Tate reps. Roster Grid, same line of thinking as myself here. Interesting that Michael Robinson seems to be lining up on the outside. I kind of penciled him. I had this, I don't want to call it an argument, but me and Graver talked about this earlier this month. Graver can take a victory lap on me. I kind of thought the same. I kind of had him as more of a nickel guy, but he does seem to be taking a lot of these outside reps in these OTAs. You know what's the most confusing thing about this rep that no one else might notice but me? We've got Cam Ward throwing to Carnell Tate. Clearly they got the ones out there. Is that Truman Jones rushing the passer on this rep? Is everyone not there? Who else? Who's at OTAs?
It's that rotation, Justin. These guys aren't playing more than four snaps in a row. So you got to get, even Truman Jones is going to get an opportunity because everybody's playing.
I'm going to have to second guess this no four snaps in a row if we've got Truman Jones. And I think it's J.C. Latham at right tackle, is it not? I think I can quickly tell. That's 55. Yeah, that's J.C. Latham.
I just switched clips back to the one-hander.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure the other one is also J.C. Latham on the rep, but... pretty funny. I don't know Jeff Simmons, but Truman Jones, how many guys are down? Give me Jalen Harrell on this rep. Give me some, right? Give me Jacob Barrett.
Simmons is working out in Dallas with his personal trainers on his plan. He posted, I think, to Instagram something today that people were getting hot about because they were saying Jeff, 14 sack season incoming, I think maybe is an article or a debate that Easton had this morning on A to Z Sports, and Jeff's posting stuff that's getting people excited. Justin, let's do it. Let's hit the thing. Oh, my goodness gracious.
It's been long enough since Gary made this donation. I wanted to hit it earlier. It's been a couple of minutes. Gary Soto, the leader of the Audible Army, if you will. Yes, that title is up for grabs. It literally costs money. I'm calling Gary the leader of the Audible Army. He's earned it. He deserves it. Gary, all kidding aside, we joke a lot, but your generosity is unbelievable. It's so appreciated. We didn't do two live shows today, so you can make two donations. Graver pitched this idea to me the other night, and I was like, oh, I hated to admit it. It's a Friday. I'd love to finish my week early. I'm on Eastern time, right? So it's 3:15 here. I start work here on SI at about 6:30 in the morning. I said, I'd love to finish my Friday early, but it does make sense to go twice because we're going to miss the practice note. So let's go twice. We didn't expect you to make two donations, Gary. Your generosity is unbelievably appreciated.
Let me just be clear. I don't expect you to make any donations.
Of course.
We are extremely appreciative of the support for the channel. Justin, one other note on this Cam Ward to Carnell Tate stuff that was so hot today is this connection developing. We wanted to see if all the receivers were out there and all the targetable players were available to Cam Ward, would there still be this consistency with Carnell Tate? And that appears to be the case because all of the receivers that are going to make this roster were at practice today, including Calvin Ridley, Shemure Dike, Elik Iemanuir, the guys we haven't heard hardly anything, if anything at all, about this spring. They're all back at practice today. Now, it should be noted that they weren't all participating heavily in the team drills, so there could be a reason still for Carnell Tate to stand out and shine, being that he is it's him or Bryce Oliver, for example, or him or Hank Beattie or Lance McCutcheon or one of these other guys that isn't going to make the team, most likely. So that's one reason he could still be standing out. We haven't seen, Calvin Ridley, Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson take the field for a large number of team reps with Shemure Dike and Elik Iemanuir mixing in. So there's still that to keep in mind. But you'd love to see this developing because, again, if the Titans offense is going to take a step forward, You obviously have to hope better coaching plays a role in that, with Brian Daboll replacing the triage of Brian Callahan, Nick Holtz, and Bo Hardigree from last year. Somebody who has a track record of success at not just an offensive coordinator, but a head coach, now back in the offensive coordinator role. You hope that a step forward by your quarterback in year two is a part of that offensive success. But you also have to hope that the weapons are better. And the Titans, as we talked about earlier this morning, Ben Solak has the Titans receivers as the fourth most improved position group of any team across the NFL. So better weapons, Carnell Tate being the primary guy there. And while we're talking about Cam Ward's day, he also, apparently, neither of these catches, according to the people on hand, neither of these plays were the play of the day. The play of the day was actually Cam Ward down the sideline to Bryce Oliver. Paul Kuharsky said it was a perfect throw and an even better catch, fingertip catch by Bryce Oliver, just dropped right in the bucket. Cam Ward down the sideline, deep accuracy. It's been a point of like improvement that we wanted to see from him dating back to his time at Miami. Not just throwing deep, not just throwing 20 plus yards in the air, right? Because, you know, a deep post or even a deep over, if it's deep enough, can qualify as a deep pass. But specifically for Cam, deep sideline throws have been a point of an area where he has struggled at times. So to hear that he's hitting Bryce Oliver perfectly in stride on a deep sideline throw for about 25 yards is awesome for his development and his improvement. And it's just awesome that that's the play of the day. You want your quarterback to be making the play of the day when the Titans are in the position they're in. And to hear that he did it to a guy who's probably wide receiver six at best, just a really great development from practice.
Yeah, I mean, if those throws weren't one of the plays of the day, especially the one-handed grab, I hope we get to see the Bryce Oliver one at some point, because that's really, really impressive. And good call on your part regarding the deep sideline stuff, because it was an area that he struggled with a little bit last season. So glad to see that, you know, some improvement so far at OTAs. I also want to note, because I feel like we're going to forget it, but there was a good note from the beats that the two-minute drill was interesting and exciting, though fell slightly short. So Cam Ward, in the two-minute hurry-up offense, converted a third-down play to Carnell Tate, and then later on that drive, converted a fourth down inside the 15-yard line to Wandell Robinson. So that was interesting, but fell short, no points, couple opportunities from the goal line to get in the end zone, three straight incompletions, I think, three different receivers. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but KJ Osborne, I believe, was targeted on one of them, and they couldn't end up getting into the end zone. So there's that as well.
Yeah, I got it right here in front of me if you want it, just to know who the targeted players were. Tate on first down, Gunnar Helm on second down, KJ Osborne on third down, and they were unable to convert there. I guess, wasn't it a turnover on downs? That's only three downs. I don't know.
Maybe they probably say, oh, we would have kicked the field goal on this. Maybe they don't give them a fourth chance,
yeah,
right?
Maybe that's what it was. Justin, we got to take a break here, and then we're going to talk about some other practice notes, maybe a player who struggled in ways that we should have expected, and some quotes from the podium when we come right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, we roll on here talking about Titans' second open OTA practice, which took place on Friday at Vanderbilt Sports health, performance, fitness, training, center.
There's no way
building.
It's got all of those names. There's no way. There's no way.
Whatever. Vanderbilt over St. Thomas now, I guess. Another thing that happened at practice, Justin, I want to talk about is that Will Levis, I guess Mitch Trubisky wasn't practicing again. I haven't seen that was written anywhere, but I have seen a lot.
A couple of the beats tweeted no Mitch Trubisky.
Got it. Good. So no Mitch Trubisky at practice means a lot more snaps for Will Levis to go around. And here's the thing that I think we glossed over last Thursday. I wanted to mention and sort of forgot in the heat of the conversation. And that stood out again today is that while Will Levis seems to have shown some improvement in terms of like making touch throws versus everything being a rocket launcher pass, there is still this propensity to turn the ball over in ridiculously disastrous ways. And now last week, it was a comparison in the two-minute drives. Cam Ward finished his two-minute drills with touchdowns. Will Levis's two-minute drill opportunity last week ended in an interception. It was the only interception he threw last practice, but still ended in an interception. Today, Cam Ward, no interceptions. You love to see that. Will Levis threw two, and one of them sounds like it was a complete epic disaster in line with his 2024 moments that became memes every week, weekly Will Levis meme that season. They were trying to set up a screen that the defense sniffed out, and it got totally blown up. And whether it was a screen or a check down, there's varying, interpretations of the play out there based on who you are reading from. But regardless, trying to target Nick Singleton, which you love to see, Nick Singleton out there in team practice periods. Anyway, Levis tries to throw it to Singleton. The play's been completely blown up by the defense. Solomon Thomas, who apparently is massive, picks it off and runs it all the way back for a pick six. I mean, this is exactly the kind of stuff that Will Levis was doing that season that made you want to pull your hair out. Like, it's not just a turnover. It's a horrendous turnover on a play where you probably should never even throw the ball because it's been blown up. So just dirt it or throw it out of bounds or take a sack. And not only that, is it a turnover, it's a turnover returned for a touchdown. If I had to visualize what this play would look like on an NFL actual Sunday field, I would picture the Miami Dolphins game where Levis had almost this exact play happen through an interception, pick six on a screen. But he's still turning the ball over. As Justin receives a phone call.
I thought the same thing. I wasn't surprised at all. I thought the Miami play as well immediately for Will Levis. And he had a second interception to Keydrain Callahan is one of the back end.
If it's like
DBs
a Scottish Irish-ish pronunciation, it would be Callahan despite the G. But if it's an American pronunciation, it's probably Callaghan. I don't know. I've never heard anyone official say his name out loud.
We need him to come to the podium like Austin Schlotman.
And
tell us how to pronounce his name. But Keydrain Callahan had the interception, the second one on Will Levis. Didn't sound like a very good practice for Will Levis. He had a good one last Thursday at the Open, at the first Open OTA, right? There was all these news and notes. I think he was 10 for 14 they tracked, but not a good one here today, it sounded like.
Yeah. Any other – I mean, this I'll be honest with you, audience. A largely uneventful practice in terms of, like, big plays or
that's what it sounds like
out.
To me, too. Yeah.
It's also, again, it's May. They're in shorts. There's no contact. As I said this morning, as Robert Saleh said last Thursday, this is a glorified 7-on-7 passing camp. Like, there's not a whole lot to even have happen. But luckily, we had a lot of people speak. And when there were, again, largely uneventful press conferences from the position coaches. They were very short, not a ton of questions. There was one, I think it may have been Randy Jordan or whoever spoke before Randy Jordan, where like they're trying to get one, the press was trying to get one more question in and they're already ushering him off the podium and bringing the next guy up, like conveyor belt moving along whatever. So there was a few things that I thought were interesting. And I want to say that Carmen Brasillo is the one who brought this up first, but talking about Robert Saleh's process for developing these players is that they had meetings this spring or this offseason, earlier in the offseason, to talk about how to improve, how to get these players to improve and develop and take a step forward, and that they had one thing that they wanted to prioritize, that it's like, take this one area of your game, focus on it, like hone in on it, take it, turn it from a weakness to a strength, and then we'll worry about the next area of your game that needs improvement. But for now, just take this one thing. I thought that was a very interesting approach. Again, Carmen Brasillo talked about it, but it's a Robert Saleh mandate. This is happening team-wide, and I love that. And he was even asked, like, what was J.C. Latham's one thing? And he was like, I'm going to keep that in-house. I'm not going to tell you what J.C.'s one thing was. But then Randy Jordan speaks about Tajay Spears, and he's asked, what's Tajay Spears' one thing? And he told us what Tajay Spears' one thing was, which
is
about...
I don't think you watched Luke Stalker either, but he told us what Gunnar Helms was.
Oh, okay. You tell us that in one moment. But yeah, I was prepping the show. I didn't have a chance to watch Stalker. But Tajay Spears' one thing is patience and timing and pace behind the line of scrimmage on inside runs has to be different than if you're trying to get the edge on a run. You got to wait for those blocks to get set up. You got to find and see the hole, and then you got to explode through it. So a little bit more patience in Tajay Spears' running style. And Luke Stalker talked about Gunnar Helms' one thing.
He did. If I'm remembering correctly now, it was essentially not as exciting. Placement, hand placement, inline blocker. Mm. Timing and placement as an inline blocker, essentially.
Which is good. You want to see Gunnar Helm continue to take the steps to be an inline blocker. You know, Daniel right. Bellinger can block at a functional level. I wouldn't call it an excellent level. Like, he's not Charlie Kohler out there who's going to be on the field purely because he can block. Yeah, I'm talking about Bellinger.
But he is the best one, probably. So I imagine he ends up getting the majority of that responsibility.
I agree. And the point I was getting to there is to say that if Gunnar Helm can take... Like, Gunnar Helm, by the end of last season, was a pretty decent blocker. Serviceable, at least. Yeah. Maybe not good or great, but at least serviceable. If he can take another step to become good as a blocker, and you already have Daniel Bellinger, who's a pretty good blocker, and both of those guys can also run routes and catch passes, it allows your offense to be a lot more multiple. And that is something that Robert Saleh touched on in this morning's presser. And it's just something that helps your offense catch a defense off guard, is if you got both tight ends on the field and one of them's primary responsibility on any given play is to block and the others is to go out and run a route. If they can both do both, it adds to the deceptive abilities, the misdirection capabilities, it's just interchangeable personnel. You'd rather have that than not, I think. So nice to hear that that's what Gunnar Helm's working on. He doesn't need work as a route runner or pass catcher. He needs work as a blocker. So obviously that's his one thing.
I agree. He's a better receiver right now than he is blocker. And if he's going to take that step and be more versatile this year and maybe make them a little less reliant on Daniel Bellinger having to do all of the blocking, then right. That would be a big step in the right direction to Gunnar Helm getting more reps, right? Where did Melo get that shirt? This is the Mount Rushmore shirt. Yeah, the Chris Johnson, Eddie George. I think it's made by... Homage, whatever it's pronounced. Yeah, you know the class, the homage. What are they called? You know, they're
is that homage. Homage.
Yes.
That's not Hang Ten.
I didn't buy this. I'll be honest with you. This was gifted to me, by the Titans. It came in a box. Thank you, box, for doing all this content that we do on the Tennessee Titans, essentially. But yes, it came in a gift box. But it is by Homage, so you probably find it on their website, I hope. Pretty
Are you
cool
sure
shirt.
It's not a Hang Ten shirt. I'm just asking because could stand for
Hang Ten. No, this is the logo, I think, for Homage. I'm pretty sure the H on the sleeve. Mm, yeah.
I don't know it. So if you know, you know. I don't know it.
No. Yeah. I'm pretty calm. It's pronounced homage, as Jabba Chunk says.
Yeah. I don't even think you say the H. I think it's homage.
It might be homage. I'm not, I got to be more cultured. Damn it. It might be homage. Do you want to run through? There's a lot. I mean, they didn't say a lot of interesting things, but do you want to run through some of the stuff the coaches or players said, or you want Monday? How do you want to handle that?
I thought most of the stuff, to be honest, that the coaches said was like coach speak expected.
Agreed.
Like if you told me what the question was and asked me to predict what the answer would be,
yes.
I feel like I would have gotten almost all of them with a 90% accuracy
me
rate.
Me too. That's why I thought I could do it running really rapid fire. And I almost want to go in order because it helps me remember.
Yeah.
Like quarterback coach, running back coach.
Why don't you do that? Just let me give the one other comment that did stand out to me as interesting and worth spending a little bit extra time on is Aaron Whitecotton asked about his coaching style and how he would describe it. References Jim Washburn, who was a legendary coach for the Titans, defensive line coach, and said that his style, what did he say?
Deranged raccoon?
Thank you. Called himself a deranged raccoon, which is amazing.
No. Coach them.
Like a deranged raccoon, yes. Like a deranged raccoon, yeah, there you go. I just found it. So that, to me, it's like, we saw the clip, we played it on the show of him at practice getting the, running the defensive line drills. This is a guy who has had productive players at his position group every stop of his NFL career. And to hear him, like, literally, like, say, yeah, I am coaching like a deranged raccoon. It's not just like a coach speak like, oh, yeah, you know, that's just my, just got to be myself. That's who I am. But also showing that respect to Jim Washburn when asked about a follow-up about him. He said, I would never put myself in the same sentence as Jim Washburn. He's a legend. I have the utmost respect for that guy. I just thought that was funny. I think Aaron Whitecotton is going to be a very good resource for the Titans defensive line and a very good instructor for those players. I'm glad he is. I'm glad Robert Saleh was able to bring him along on this staff. And it was cool to hear him speak for the first time.
Yeah, I thought he was one of the ones I was most looking forward to. Talk about having great mentors. He mentioned Jim Washburn, and he said his other mentor, I don't know the last name, Chris
Kocurek?
Kocurek?
Kocurek? Kocurek?
It's K. I know how to spell it. It's K-O-C-U-R-E-K. Chris Kocurek with the San Francisco 49ers, who's also known as one of the better D-line coaches around the NFL. So it was exciting to hear Aaron Whitecotton speak. If I ran through rapid fire, and I do mean rapid fire, quarterback coach Shea Tierney, I thought his best line, but again, coach speak, very obvious. Coaching quarterbacks to be aggressive, not reckless. Don't want to hone them in. You want them to play aggressive. You want Cam Ward to be his aggressive self, but you also want to take care of the football. I thought Shea Tierney gave some good answers. I loved him bringing up, like, talking about Cam Ward's days at Incarnate Word. The best question anyone asked him.
Wait, before you move on from that answer, I want to say, I just want to gloat a sec, take a little victory lap. We've talked about this, because it was Brian Daboll or Robert Saleh or somebody earlier, or maybe Mike Borgonzi, talking about you want them to be aggressive, but you don't want to take chances when it's unnecessary. You don't want to neuter that side of them. You want them to run your offense, but you also don't want to limit their ability to make incredible plays. And we talked on this show about how that meant, like, if it's second and two, you don't need to make a crazy aggressive play. If it's third and eight in the fourth quarter and you're trailing, then yeah, go make the play. And Shea Tierney used, like, literally that exact sort of example of, like, the down and distance and game situation matters if we're trying to determine if something is aggressive or reckless. And he said that he would place, you know, go over plays with Cam and ask, do you think this is aggressive or reckless? And want to hear what the quarterback thinks about it. And then he'll tell him, like, I agree with you, this one was aggressive, or I disagree, this one was reckless. Cool process to hear about. I'm glad Tierney elaborated on that.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good question and good answer. And I also appreciated the question about what him, Daboll, and the Giants liked so much about Cam Ward throughout the pre-draft process, right? Because we've talked a lot about how those guys, we know they wanted to trade up for Cam Ward. Obviously, Tierney would have been his position coach. Now he is his position coach. So I thought there was some interesting insight there into them, you know, talking about what they loved about Cam as a prospect. He gave a pretty, you know, standard, oh, he's mature, he's a leader, he's accountable. But I appreciated that question. I thought Randy Jordan was entertaining as well. He's always entertaining. I thought maybe my favorite quote anybody said is he said, and Robert Saleh's kind of alluded to this as well, based on how little you could actually take away from OTAs in all truth. Randy Jordan said, I told Tajay Spears, we in pajamas out here because there's no pads on. That's how serious they're taking some of this stuff. I thought that was funny. I also thought he was hilariously blunt when they asked about Jeremiah Love. Like, did you think you needed that kind of investment? I thought he was going to give more of, like, a, you know, coach speak answer. He said no. And throughout his entire session, I kept thinking, find yourself someone who loves you as much as Randy Jordan loves Tony Pollard. I mean, he just gloats about Tony Pollard being a pro's pro. They love, this team loves Tony Pollard, the human being. Interesting stat when Tony Pollard was at the podium, one that I didn't know off the top of my head, was a great question as well. I think it was one of the opening questions. I don't think you saw this, right? Because I don't know if you saw the players speak. Tony Pollard, one of two running backs in the NFL with 1,000 rushing yards in four straight seasons. Only one other running back has done that the entire
Who
time.
Is it?
I assume it's Derrick Henry.
Of course.
Yeah, Derrick. The foot injury in Tennessee throws me off because he missed so much of that year. But I'm like, I think it's Derrick Henry. Wide receiver coach didn't speak. Tight end coach didn't speak. I'll be honest with you. Sorry, tight end coach was Luke Stalker. I didn't think he said anything super interesting, to be blunt. He really, not in my opinion. O-line coach Carmen Brasillo, I'll be honest with you. I was hoping for more from that Carmen Brasillo. He essentially just said, he wouldn't even talk about position competitions. We're learning, we're growing, it's that time of the calendar. Yes, he talked about wanting smart and tough on the O-line. Kind of echoes everything Mike Borgonzi has said. And he talked about Fernando Carmona, Pat Coogan. And he also noted the UDFAs, by the way, kind of checking those boxes for being smart and being tough.
Yeah, and that goes to something that Sala talked about this morning that we never really touched on, that was in our notes to touch on and we didn't touch on it, which was Sala was asked about the swing tackle spot. And he basically refused to comment on it. Wouldn't even say who's in the mix for it. He was basically like, I'll have an answer for you on that middle of training camp.
Let's get the pads on. It goes back to everything. He's like, this isn't, you can tell he thinks this isn't real football at all, to be honest with you. And he's just, they're all just biding their time so they can get the pads on.
Justin, before we move forward with this show, I want to talk about some stuff Austin Schlotman said. I want to talk about the fact that Austin Schlotman spoke and why
Me
it's
too.
Meaningful that he
that
was
the most
at the
notable
podium.
Thing that he spoke.
But we're going to take one last break for the weekend, our last break of the whole weekend, Justin, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, Austin Schlotman, who is, by all accounts, I mean, for what we know, in a heated battle for the starting center job, not even a guaranteed confirmed starter. But he had a podium appearance, media availability today. I don't know if I've ever seen or heard of a team putting a guy at the podium, unless it's like the day they get drafted or the day they get signed as a free agent or whatever, introduced to the team, like in the middle of spring practices, a guy who is a backup going to the podium. It's not like these guys are out at the fence at, you know, after practice where they're running up to any player they can get and just asking them quite like this is a podium scheduled media availability. As we said last week, we know this, whether or not the rest of Titans fans and media want to know this or not, that's on them. But we will be the definitive podcast, Titans podcast, that tells you Austin Schlotman is your starting center. He just is.
Yeah, I thought it was super notable that he spoke, and he talked about playing for Brian Daboll and Carmen Brasillo and knowing the system at a high level. And again, I thought it was a good session, but the most notable thing is that he was selected to speak at all. You're not seeing, you know, I don't think you're going to see Cordell Volson out there. You know what I mean? Like guys who are entrenched in these position battles.
Right.
I don't think there's a battle at all. I think Schlotman is your week one starting center.
Real quick, pause on the conversation. Just going to hit a couple of chats here. This is an oldie. Nathan Smith wants to hear this, so I'll give it to you. Let me know, Justin, by the way, just for everyone to know, I cannot hear the drops as I'm playing them live unless I put my headphones on, which I'm not going to do right now. So if you've ever seen me producing Heed the Call, you'll notice I have one of the canned headphones on one ear and my AirPod in the other ear. That's so I can hear the drops and the guys. When we're doing this, like visually, I don't want the cans on my head. So I cannot hear the drops. Justin, if this is the wrong drop, tell me.
Tighten down.
You nailed it. It's the right drop.
I nailed it.
That was
right.
A Brian Callahan tighten down.
And then one other question before we continue. Roster Grids asks, where's the Carnell Tate beat? Now, I played this for you guys a few weeks back when Justin was out. I told you I was working on this, and I was going to make it into a whole video. Look, I had to go get married. I'll just be frank with you. I haven't had time to figure this out yet. I want to do this. The summer's here. Everything's slower. We're only doing two Heed the Call shows a week. It's like I'll have time for this eventually when we are done with like holiday weekends and such that are compressing my 5-day week into a 4-day week. Like it's been a lot, but I'll get back to it eventually. Carnell Tate. I'm always open. It's a great beat and it'll be fun. I just haven't finished it yet. Okay, Justin. Schlotman, what else did he say?
No, I mean, I thought that was the most notable, you know, that he spoke at all. But he talked about how the Titans contacted him during the legal tampering period. Like they were clearly and unsurprisingly due to the connections in on him very, very quickly. I'm going to keep running through rapid fire, if you don't mind.
I had something else from Schlotman I wanted to mention, which was he was basically asked, you know, the Giants line wasn't that good. And then Carmen Brasillo showed up and it was good. How did that happen? And I thought the way he described Brasillo's process there was very interesting, talking about how it's important to always know how everyone else on the line is moving. Because obviously, if you know a guy needs to like reach a certain way or stretch a certain way or is going to be sliding a certain way, and then you see a defender coming from a certain way, like you can put the space math together in your head and figure out if there's an unblocked guy about to run through the line or if you're about to get beat by a twist or a stunt or a game that threw you off. Like having this, we talk about this all the time, but the idea that an offensive line has to work as a unit, they have to all be in sync. That's why you always hear people talk about, well, the offensive line is gelling, because it's not just about individual talent one-on-one matchups. It's about one unit working together, perhaps the most important unit working together in all of sports is the offensive linemen moving like one. So hearing that there is a lot of emphasis placed on this in the team meetings as they're installing the system, understanding how everybody's going to be moving in a certain direction, it gives me a lot of hope and confidence. I mean, confidence, probably a stretch. Hope, probably the right word when you look at what they didn't do at right guard this offseason, and even at center, as we're talking about Austin Schlotman, that the offensive line can be at least above or around league average. I have that hope, and I'm starting to get that confidence because Carmen Brasillo's done it before. He did it in Las Vegas. He did it in New York. He's done it twice. Now he's got to come do it in Tennessee. I do think a lot of Titans fans are jaded by hearing like, oh, you got a good O-line coach who can come in here and fix this thing up, because the Titans were supposed to have the best O-line coach that you could possibly hire two years ago, and the offensive line wasn't good. But I don't know how much I've talked about this on the show, Justin. I talked to a former NFL coach a couple of years ago. This is when Bill and Brian were hired. I talked to a former NFL head coach.
I know exactly what you're going to say. I'm surprised you're willing to tell this story.
I'm not going to reveal the source.
But I'll say this, though. I still take this, no offense, but I take this with a grain of salt.
I do, too, for reasons that I can't really disclose, yeah, or else it'll give away the source. But this person told me, and I actually heard this from a player also who played for Bill Callahan. Actually, maybe that's a better one. Forget the head coach who told me this. A different thing I heard from an offensive lineman who played for Bill Callahan is that he, first of all, did not like Bill Callahan at all, thought he was vastly overrated as a coach. And he was telling me these things, again, spring 2024, right after the Titans hired them. And I'm like, I don't want to hear any of this. I want the positive stuff. I'm tuning this out. I'm ignoring it. You're bitter, whatever. Now, in hindsight, 2 years later, kind of feels like this person was accurate, but told me that Bill Callahan designs his run scheme. Remember, Bill Callahan was in charge of the run game for the Titans the last 2 years until he got fired or resigned, I guess, midseason or after week six. And then Luke Stalker sort of took over. And what do you know? The run game took off. Bill Callahan, apparently, at least at the time that this player played for him, was designing his run scheme by going through tape for their upcoming opponent, looking at their recent games, looking at what run concepts worked well against that specific defense, and then stealing and installing those run concepts for his offense for the next week. That was like how he game planned, which on the one hand is like, okay, cool, he's attacking a team's weaknesses. On the other hand, it's like, you don't have like an identity or like a, this is what we want to do and we're going to take what we do and use those aspects of what we do against what they struggle to defend. Also, you don't think that they're like doing a little self-scouting after each game and like saying like, hey, next time we see a look like this, we need to play it differently and better. I don't know. I thought that was a really weird thing to hear about one of the most well-regarded NFL position coaches in the league. And also like when you look back on it, you're like, I can kind of see why maybe. Anyway, this was a long spiel to say that Titans fans are jaded about hearing an offensive line coach can help because they just had an all-time offensive line coach who did not help. But we have to not let that affect what we think of Carmen Brasillo.
Yeah, I mean, look, he came here. The O-line didn't get better under him. I don't know that anyone's trajectory changed under Bill Callahan is the truth, right? And we hope that's different under Carmen Brasillo. We hope he's got the guys that he wants. Like, he got to handpick his center, right? I don't know that. I don't know that anyone got handpicked by Bill Callahan at all, to be honest with
you. J.C. Latham was reportedly a Bill Callahan selection.
I know, but I always question, like, they let the O-line coach make the decision at number 7 overall. I highly doubt that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure the GM and head coach made that decision. But anyway, Carmen Brasillo, if he could level out this unit and just kind of get them playing, like you said, league average, I get it, but let's have some hope here. And I do think it's a big difference point being that he got to bring a center over from his system. Hopefully that is a bit of a, you know, equalizer compared to what Callahan did or didn't do. I can't believe this is why we're such nerds. Like, I don't know how we spent this much time on a Bill Callahan thing on this today's pod, but I'm going to move forward with the rapid fire with some of the other coach stuff that actually happened today. Not a guy who's not here anymore. Linebacker coach Dave Borgonzi spoke for the first time. I thought it was funny. Someone asked him about interviewing here while his brother is the general manager. And he gave the most, like, it was like, anyway, it was an NFL job interview. I didn't have any special treatment whatsoever. I interviewed with the head coach and the D coordinator and hoped to impress them. I thought that was funny. I mean, I imagine the GM gave him a, you know, probably put in a good word with the head coaches are doing.
Actually, no. Remember, Sala was asked. I mean, who knows? It's all, we can't, you have to question everything that is said publicly to the media about a guy you just hired. But Sala said that he actually, this is at the combine, I believe, because it was right after they hired Dave Borgonzi, said that he thought initially Dave's connection to Mike would be a negative because of the, like, almost like a reverse nepotism situation or whatever. But the fact that then he interviewed him and Sala said he was by far our best interview candidate, so we hired him. Like, I don't know. I think maybe the GM put in a good word, but there was also interesting comment, as I interrupt myself, from Emens saying Justin's lips are so sexy. We're not going to ask which one you're talking about. That way both of us can take the confidence boost and assume we'll each assume you're talking about us. Anyway, Mike Borgonzi, I think you might have said this on the OTP somewhere. I don't know. Justin, I consume so much Titans content, I often forget where I hear things. But said that he almost, like, didn't want to put in a good word for Dave Borgonzi because he didn't want it to come across as, like, any nepotistic practices going on. So, I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I guess we can always question what they tell us publicly and also use logic to assume that, like, Mike probably helped his brother, but I don't know. Maybe he didn't.
Dave Borgonzi said, fun fact, he was at James Williams' pro day when he was a linebackers coach elsewhere and was a big fan of James Williams throughout the pre-draft process. I thought that was interesting. Who else spoke? The DB coaches. They didn't. One thing that was interesting, I think Paul Kuharsky asked the nickel coach, how do you go about coaching everyone in this room? And I thought it was interesting. I'm like, that has the potential to backfire if you don't have a really good relationship. He kind of said, well, we all are coaching all of them. Like, I'll kind of give pointers to the safeties, even though I'm not the safeties coach. And he'll come over and talk to my guys, and we don't mind because we've all been around, and a couple of them are former players. Marquand Manuel and the nickel coach both played. So it's like we've got a lot of knowledge of DB play. We trust each other to kind of bounce around and talk to our guys. I thought I like it, but, you know, certainly in other work environments might not work. I don't have a problem with it. I'll quickly mention a lot of guys. I think Kevin Winston did it as well. Next, I want to talk. We're running out of time here. I want to talk about Kevin Winston's session. Tony Adams was brought up unprompted like three different times. Maybe not unprompted every time, but unprompted a couple times. And the DB coaches raved about him, and so did Kevin Winston. One or two of them were unprompted. I started thinking about it. Like, if you're a D lineman on this team, you have so many guys who can help teach you this system, right? Like Jacob Martin, Solomon Thomas, John Franklin Myers. They're helping the other D linemen who haven't played for Robert Saleh learn this system. When you go to the DB room, Tony Adams is the only guy who can do that, right? Amani Hooker and Kevin Winston Jr. are holdovers. Cordell Flott played for Brian Daboll, but Daboll wasn't installing the defense with the New York Giants, right? So Alante Taylor, like all these guys who are here, this is their first time in this system. That's interesting because there's really no other position group, I guess linebacker a little bit, but there's no other position group where that's the case. So knowing football the way I know football, that is why they keep talking about Tony Adams today. He played for Robert Saleh. He played for Marquand Manuel, right, with the New York Jets. Yeah. So he knows this system so well. I'm sure spring practices or OTAs, Tony Adams has probably been a huge asset to these guys in the DB room. And he got a lot of praise today. Like a bunch of, like, I want to say it was Ike Hillard. It was, I keep saying Ike Hillard. It's Dalton Hillard, the DB coach, I think his name.
Yes.
Dalton
Hillard. Hilliard.
Hilliard. Yeah, with the I. Well, there's an I in there, right? Dalton Hilliard, who's the other second? Marquand Manuel and Kevin Winston Jr. all mentioned Tony Adams' name today while speaking at the podium. Speaking of Kevin Winston, if you don't mind, because you didn't see this, I thought his player session was the best one. Said he was not healthy last year at all. He pretty much almost called it like a waste of a year for him. He said that this time last year was really interesting to me. Perspective is everything. I was in the rehab room dying to go out there and touch grass. This year, I'm fully healthy. I've got a full off season. I'm at OTAs when I wasn't at OTAs last year. I expect to take a huge jump this year. And reading between the lines, by the way, and I think I'm good at this, Paul Kuharsky, earlier with one of the DB coaches, I don't remember who, asked about Kevin Winston playing deep traditional safety. I think PK knew exactly what he was doing. I'm guessing, he asked that question based on what he's seen. They purposely gave him nothing. The DB coach, they gave him nothing. Oh, everyone's got to be versatile, time of year, blah, blah. When Kevin Winston, go ahead.
Let me interrupt you really quick just for context. The guys at practice, the media people at practice, are not allowed to report who is lining up where.
Right.
But if a coach or player says it at the podium, they obviously are allowed to report on the quote. So they can't, Paul can't say, oh, Amani's been playing a whole lot of deep safety or whatever. He can ask a coach at a podium who's going to do that role. And if they tell him, then he can go report on it. So that's the reason for trying to ask those kinds of questions.
So they gave Paul nothing, but I felt like he was hinting at something without saying it based on what he's seen, as you mentioned, the rules, right? But when Kevin Winston went up to the podium, he talked about playing and essentially solely focusing on playing traditional safety, back end role, basically admitting, I'm not playing any big nickel, I'm not doing anything else but playing deep safety. Listen, they need a guy like that, opposite Amani Hooker, you know, kind of interchangeable with Amani like Kevin Byard was once upon a time. I'm glad he's doing that. And it also adds more sort of credence, if you will, to my expectation that, like, I don't know that you're ever going to see Kevin Winston in, like, well, he can also play safety, big nickel. I think Marcus Harris is like an every down nickel in this defense. I think it's going to be Marcus Harris, and more Marcus Harris. I think occasionally when they roll out three safeties, maybe you'll see Tony Adams in that role. I also think Tony Adams, if you watch him play for the New York Jets, he's better around the line of scrimmage than he is deep in coverage. He's a bit of a liability in coverage. So if they ever bring a third safety onto the field, I think Winston's role still doesn't change. And Tony Adams more so maybe replaces what Marcus Harris is doing. But I really think Marcus Harris is going to be like an every down nickel in this defense. And they're asking Winston to play that traditional next to Amani Hooker safety role.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation, Justin. A great way to read into that stuff. Is that all of the press quotes that you had? Because I have a few little quick things I want to touch on, but I want you to finish before.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much everything that caught my attention, both from the players and coaches sessions.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't bring up Cedric Gray saying this about Carnell Tate.
Tate?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's the truth. Yeah. He's the truth. Y'all just saw it today. He had a few plays today. I actually literally just went up to him after practice today. I told him, you cold. Because for real, I'm a huge fan. I'm on the Tate bandwagon right now.
Carnell Tate.
If he's on the Tate bandwagon, then so am I. And Justin, I just want to shout out the Titan social media team for understanding a meme, I guess is the best way to put it. this is wild. So the Mettenberger, very good Titans fan-focused account that I encourage everyone to follow if you are also a Titans fan, tweeted under the second Carnell Tate play, which again, if you didn't see that, if you're joining us late, here was the second catch of two incredible contested catches made by Carnell Tate at practice today. There it is. Titan social accounts posted that. Mettenberger replied to that tweet saying, "Thank you for not making me beg this time, admin," to which the Titans official account responds with a SpongeBob GIF, and the text on top says, "Never go to Trader Joe's on a Sunday." So the Titans account picking up on the Trader Joe's meme thing, just incredible. I love it. It's awesome. Shout out to whoever's running that account. Shout out to Nate Bain, who I don't believe is like running that account, but is definitely involved. And I love that. And while we close out this episode, Justin, we have a few chats that I starred that we can hit.
Me too, yeah.
I'm just going to play the Carnell Tate stuff on a loop because it's awesome.
As you should. Why don't we get some of the starred questions? You want to pull them up or?
Yeah. Robista 1985 asks, do you think the Titans should be in on Sweat? I'm assuming he's referring to former Tennessee Titan Tavondre Sweat. Just kidding. I'm not an idiot. Cardinals defensive end Josh Sweat is not present at OTAs. He wants a new contract. What did he have, 12 sacks last year or something like that?
Career high. Yeah, career high on sacks.
He was a guy that, if anyone remembers this, I would love to know if anyone remembers my specific draft position on Josh Sweat. I believe, was that the year they took Rashawn Evans, or was that
I think it was. We both love Josh Sweat, you and I.
I wanted them to take Josh Sweat in the first round. He ends up falling to the fourth round, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was the fourth round.
Where the Eagles snatch him up. He was like a rotational edge there, but still had a couple of great seasons. Hits free agency, signs a big deal with the Cardinals, but not big enough because he wants a raise. Do you think the Titans would... Do you think it makes any sense for the Titans at this stage of their rebuilding process to go trade for Josh Sweat?
It would probably be too expensive, to be honest with you, but I love Josh Sweat, and if you could get him for the right price, I'll be honest, I wouldn't be opposed, but I imagine the Cardinals are asking for a lot, and I don't think the Titans would be willing to meet, like, what do you think, like a second round pick, a third round pick? Like, I would do it for a fourth, to be honest with you. I think I would do it for a fourth, potentially, but I imagine the Cardinals would ask for more than that.
Yeah, I would be surprised if the Titans are interested in making a trade like that, just because of everything Mike Borgonzi has said about how he wants to build this team and where they're at, and the fact that, like, they do have a bunch of guys that need to be evaluated, and you're not going to evaluate them if Josh Sweat is playing massive snaps ahead of them. They need to evaluate if Jermaine Johnson is worth trying to bring back the year, you know, for the 2027 season, if he's fully bounced back from his Achilles injury. They need to evaluate if Femi Oladejo is a bust of a second-round pick or a breakout player this year. They need to evaluate if they just wasted a first-round pick on Keldrick Falk or got a great value pick there at the end of the first round. So I think it would be crazy for them to trade for Josh Sweat. As much as I loved him as a prospect coming out, and as much as I've loved him as an NFL player who has, like, made me look smart, I think, because he's been good as an edge rusher, I just don't think it makes sense for the Titans specifically. This is a very interesting question. I guess you started this one because I didn't. Frustrated Mime wants us to give our fourth favorite Titan of all time.
I thought about this when he asked it more than I should have, more than I'd care to admit. I'm kind of torn. There's so many options. Now, I might go, it's either Kevin Byard or Chris Johnson for me, I think. I thought Taylor Lewan, Keith Bullock. Damn, that's tough because I go like McNair, George, Henry. For me, top three is pretty straightforward. After that, I'm like, I love Kevin Byard. I loved Chris Johnson. I like Jeffrey Simmons. I liked Taylor Lewan. I think I'm kind of partial to Byard. It might be Simmons by the time he's said and done, but I think right now Kevin Byard is probably my answer to that question.
That's a good answer. My answer might be kind of lame. I think I've got the same top three as you. I don't know. I might put Chris Johnson three, which would push Henry to four. I mean, McNair, George are one and two, no doubt about it. Eddie one, Steve two, only because
CJ
when I was a child,
over Henry blows. Someone just said it in the comments too. That blows me away.
I mean, I was a different age when Chris Johnson.
Me and you were like the same age. We're not.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, now I feel like I'm like an adult. I've like wisened up to like, I don't fall for things anymore. Like, here's a story.
Did Derrick Henry hoodwink you? Did you feel bad about falling?
No. Okay. When the Titans drafted Chris Johnson in the first round, that was 2008. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think
In the 2008, I drafted Chris Johnson with my last pick of my fantasy draft as like a Titans fan. Like, this guy's probably not even going to play that much. He's a rookie. We have Lendale White, et cetera, et cetera. But I drafted him because I'm a Titans fan. And that was like one of the best fantasy picks I ever made. I made sure to get him again the next year when he went for 2,000 yards, won my league that year. I mean, Chris Johnson was one of the best fantasy seasons ever that year. I mean, I believe still holds the record for all-purpose scrimmage yards in a season, which rushing and receiving combined in one season. So, I just loved Chris Johnson. I had the shoes. He did like a Nike collab I think it was Nike, where he had like special Chris Johnson shoes, and on the back of one heel it said CJ2K, and on the other heel it said 424. Like, I loved Chris Johnson, which I guess would make Henry number four for me, but I also loved Marcus Mariota. Like, I had multiple Mariota bobbleheads. I had a signed jersey framed that I had for a long time that I no longer even have. I gave it away to an Oregon Ducks fan when the Titans moved on from Mariota. Like, I don't know.
It fell short, though. Come on. I mean, I got the Mariota autographed helmet behind me, but it didn't. I thought, but no, he's not top 10 for me. I mean, any other questions, Star, do you want to get to?
Yeah. This is just a funny quick comment from John. They should put Pat Coogan up there next week. That would really throw us off if we're sitting here saying Schlopman is speaking because he's the starter, and then they put Coogan up there. Then we'll be like, okay, we can withdraw that. Frustrated Mime has another question. How's Bishop Fitzgerald doing? I mean, I don't really know, but I will tell you he had a pass breakup on a Will Levis pass today. So he's out there making plays at some level. I mean, he was getting involved in the team period and getting a pass breakup. That's a big deal for a UDFA, I think.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, we haven't heard a whole lot about him, but...
Yeah.
Side note, is Calvin Ridley practicing yet? Well, we saw him out there today, but I don't believe he was involved in any team drills, correct? Do I have that correct? I think it's individual stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure how involved he was in the team stuff, but it was noted that he was very limited if he received any reps at all. He might not have gotten a single one. So that's there. See, look, roster grids. Mariota is my favorite all time. The stiff arm against Jacksonville is my favorite moment all time, too. Like, this is obviously, I mean, I was alive when the Titans went to the Super Bowl, but I was also 7. So it wasn't like...
I was so young.
I don't have those moments like etched into my brain where I like understood the full context of the play and the moment and the everything happening. So, and the Music City Miracle, like I was 7 when that happened too. So I agree, like this is kind of why Mariota has such a special place in my heart, is because he represents the Titans going from laughingstock to playoff contender and playoff winner in that Chiefs game. He has the most miraculous play outside of the Music City Miracle with throwing and catching a touchdown on the same play in the playoffs to go ahead of the Chiefs and overcome what was at the time the largest overcome road deficit in NFL playoff history at the time.
Well, we'll always have those memories. Yeah, the stiff arm against Jacksonville. We had been starved of playoff success, making it to the playoffs for so long at that point that one is a special one in my mind. Obviously, the comeback against Kansas City, the self-touchdown, is definitely a big one as well. Rob asks, I got the wrong one here. Carolina or Montreal tonight, Rob, my Toronto buddy. I'm going Carolina. I'm dying to see the Habs get eliminated from the playoffs. Screw them. Bruce Matthews is number four. Bruce Matthews is one of the best offensive linemen of all time. There's no doubt about it. The definition of consistency. You and I were probably a little young to fully appreciate him in his prime, obviously, but don't want to undersell. I mean, when I wrote the book, Titans of the South, Bruce Matthews' consistency is essentially unheard of. It's like, oh, you can play 20 years and start at like three different positions. Like, he played center. He played tackle. Like, he played everywhere for them on an as-needed basis, and it was just all pro elite at every position. It's unbelievable. They don't make them. They literally do not make them like Bruce Matthews anymore.
Yeah, Justin, just a couple of comments to make me feel better about arguing for Chris Johnson over Derrick Henry. Kitty Cat Jones, CJ is my favorite athlete of all time. 00 Rio Q3P. CJ was the most exciting player to watch.
That 2,000-yard year is fresh in my mind. Is like, that's one of the greatest single seasons I've ever watched of one of my favorite players. Like, I think across all sports. Like, I think about watching, obviously, I'm a big Cristiano Ronaldo fan. Like, he was, like, unbelievable in his 20s and stuff. Like, unheard of. I put that Chris Johnson season up there with, like, I do the same thing with the Derrick Henry 2,000-yard year, too. Like, I feel blessed to be alive in this moment, to be enjoying this. That's how special that Chris Johnson year was.
And Darius Horton, who, by the way, first time making it to a live stream. Welcome in, Darius. Thank you for joining us. says, I'll never forget the days of coming home from church as a 13, 14 year old and seeing CJ2K break away from the defense. Not mad at CJ2K. That was my, like, when I was around that age, when Chris Johnson was doing Chris Johnson things, my family was taking me to church almost every Sunday in the mornings. We'd come home, turn on TV, and like, it was obviously a different world for me back then. Like, now I cover football, so like, my Sundays are just completely absorbed by watching as many of the games as I can. But yeah, like, just turning on CBS. Like, I lived in Dallas too, so this is like, my dad didn't have Sunday ticket. This is before Red Zone. This was like, whatever CBS is showing you, CBS is showing you, and then you get a game break, and maybe you'll get an update on your favorite team. And for me, it was often game break, and I'm watching like the game cast on my laptop while I'm watching football, and it's like, game break, Chris Johnson runs for another touchdown. It's like, it was a special time in my life. I look back on it with a lot of nostalgia. Maybe one day the feelings I have about Henry will turn into nostalgia, because right now they're just like recent memories. I don't get any nostalgia thinking about Derrick Henry. So maybe that's the difference.
I'm already in that stage, because I think of that playoff run to the AFC Championship game. Like, that's the most fun I've ever had as a Titans fan, was that win over New England and Baltimore. The most fun I've ever had personally and with my age. And he was just unbelievable in those two games. So those are my favorite memories, really, as a Titans fan. So, Justin's, would you ever cover a training camp? I mean, realistically, we'd love to, but relocating to Nashville, I don't think is in the future for either of us. Not on the docket.
As long as I'm producing Heed the Call, I don't think this will be possible for me, because as much as I'd love to dedicate my coverage to the Titans training camp, I have to basically cover all the training camps as part of my job there. You want to take this one?
Yeah. Do we think, Anthony Keys 7472 asked, do we think Singleton will be RB1 by the end of the year? I don't. I'm sorry. Like, I love these, let's, you know, dream big, day three rookie just hits the ground running. Exception to the rule, right? And I usually don't buy into exceptions. I hope that happens, but no, I think Tony Pollard is RB1 for as long as he's healthy. I mean, you hear Randy Jordan talking about him today. Now, if Tony Pollard gets hurt, you know, stranger things have happened. They don't have a lot of, you know, Tajay Spears, Michael Carter are not every down between the tackle kind of guys. Could end up being some opportunity for Singleton if Pollard gets hurt. But no, I think the boring and most likely answer is Tony Pollard is RB1 all year long.
Yeah, this has a 0.0% chance of happening, barring injury. And I think it would take two injuries for this to happen. But I mean, maybe next year. But neither of those guys that you mentioned are under contract next year, so maybe next year.
Buddy over here, surrender to the flow. I grew up in Guelph, Ontario, just a couple hours from me here in Toronto. But I live in the U.S. now. The year CJ2K went for 2000, I went to my first Nashville Titans game week 5. He only went for like 45 yards that game. Well, that's unfortunate for you, surrender to the flow, that you did not get the great CJ experience in person. But I saw CJ live a couple of times. I was in Buffalo one year, and I was also, I believe, in, I went to Nashville for the Titans Steelers. I'll never forget it. Thursday night game, Rob Baronis game winning field goal, something along those lines. Yeah.
And just further the CJ stuff, Kitty Cat Jones had mentioned, and I said it too, but mentioned that he still has the best yardage season for a non-quarterback, total receiving rushing yards. Like,
that's
the NFL has expanded to 17 games, and we still haven't seen anybody pass his single season scrimmage yards.
What a year.
So pretty unbelievable. Justin, should I hit the thing?
You've definitely got to hit the thing for our pal Lemdos, who beats the buzzer. We were talking about getting out of here. I'm glad we didn't, because Lemdos with the 99.99 super chat stream, double live sessions equals double the chat. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate you covering the team so well. We appreciate you, Lemdos, and your unbelievable generosity as we are 70 minutes into this stream. You guys want to laugh? Let me tell a funny joke. Graver and I said we were going to do 30 minutes for this stream off air. We're like, we're doing two streams. We'll do 40 for the first stream. We did 50. And then we'll do 30 for the second stream. We've done 70.
Justin, one of the coolest things, since we're talking so much about Chris Johnson today, one of the coolest experiences for me since becoming like in NFL media space, number one was, well, you know what's actually crazy? So I'll just tell quick story time, and then we'll end the pod because we have been here for too long. But I agree, Kitty Cat Jones, time does fly. when you're having fun. So one day I'm at the NFL. I may have told this on the pod before. I don't know. One day I'm at NFL media offices, and the NFL media building is structured such that on the bottom floor is like the studios, including the podcast studio where we taped our show. The middle floor is where like the cafeteria is. It's where our offices were. A lot of offices on the middle floor that are like producers, editors, graphic designers, social team, that kind of stuff. And then the top floor is like the executive floor, right? So there's a lot of account managers, accountants are up there, HR. Actually, HR was on the middle floor. But the top floor has this executive lounge area. And whenever they would have like guests come in, or you know, they wanted like important NFL figures were coming in for a meeting or something, they'd take them upstairs. They'd wait in this little guest lounge. And this is where the espresso machine was. So they had coffee machines on every floor. But the top floor, executive lounge, is where the espresso machine was. So I went there basically every morning to make my coffee. It's open to everybody. It's not like I was doing anything wrong. But
right.
I you have to know where the best machines are in the building, right? So I go up there to make a coffee one day. I had my NFL badge. I always wore my badge on a Titans lanyard around my neck. A lot of people at work had different lanyards for their team. Some people just had the standard NFL media lanyard. But I always had a Titans lanyard. So I'm up there making coffee one morning. And I hear a voice to my left from above me, because it was a tall individual, say, "Oh, hey, Titans, huh? You don't see many of those around here." And I look over to my left, and it's Eddie frickin' George waiting to make a coffee, waiting for me to finish making my coffee so he can make his coffee. And I, like,
Eddie,
double
please,
take him, like,
"Take my coffee." Yeah.
I, like, started to respond like it was anybody. I was like, "Yeah, you really don't." Oh my goodness, it's Eddie George in my head. I'm like, "Yeah, you really don't see. I've been a Titans fan. You know what, Eddie? It's like, oh my gosh. Like, can I just tell you? Obviously, you know I'm a Titans fan, but like, you are my favorite player of all time. You're the reason I became a Titans fan. Like, what are you doing here? This is incredible." He sticks his hand out, shakes my hand, and he's like, "Oh, nice to meet you, Justin. Like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm here because we're doing an HBCU, like, meeting convention thing." This is when he was coaching at HBCU and, like, was in for some NFL, was promoting HBCUs and wanted to get him and other coaches' thoughts. So they were in the building for that purpose. And I just happened to be making a coffee upstairs when he walked up. So I had a chance to meet Eddie George. I know you had a chance to meet Eddie George too, Justin. But I got to meet Derrick Henry one Super Bowl year when we were doing Radio Row stuff. We had him on, I can't remember if we had him on Heed the Call or Bench with Bonetta at this point, but Rachel Bonetta's podcast that I also produced. But anyway, I got to meet Derrick Henry, took a picture with him. And then bringing this all back around to why I started this comment, you and I got to interview Chris Johnson on this show.
It's on
the YouTube channel. If you've never seen our interview with Chris Johnson, I think it's probably mostly evergreen. There may have been some stuff about like the specific team that was happening, but I would say if you never saw that, go back and watch it. One of our coolers, we talked to him about breaking the record, about the referees throwing a phantom holding flag that erased his ability to actually have the rushing single season rushing record, and his thoughts on that. So if you haven't seen that, I'd say scroll down
feed
or search our channel to go find the Chris Johnson interview.
We've probably picked up thousands of subscribers since that episode. So if you're new-ish here, you should absolutely go back and YouTube Music City Audible, Chris Johnson. I imagine it comes up right away. We had a great time with Chris Johnson on this show. He was awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome. So, all right, Justin.
We've had Nate Washington on this show. We've had Keith Bullock on this show, right? We had Keith Bullock. You don't remember. We did have Keith Bullock.
Interesting. We had Elijah Molden's dad on the show once upon a time.
We had Liam Cohen on this show.
We had freaking Liam Cohen, who's now, you know, an enemy because he's a division rival coach. But it was pretty cool when we had him on as the head coach, as the Will Levis's offensive coordinator breaking down film. Oh my goodness gracious. Super chat here from Emens for the future shirtless Webby with the boys. $2.99 super chat. Thank you very much for the super chat. All right, Justin, you got anything else you want to talk about? You want to tell your story meeting Eddie George, or should we save that for another day and end this podcast?
I think I've told the Eddie George story before. I think it's a cool, good story. Met Eddie George in Toronto while he was touring on Broadway. I'm not a Broadway guy, but I wanted to meet him, and I went to his show, and then he agreed to meet after. It's a crazy story because it almost didn't happen, but then it did happen. Eddie's great. Really, really. I had an awesome experience. Like, he was like chatting up, didn't really want, like, you know, wasn't rushing us. He was asking me questions on how I felt about the team and do I like Mike Vrabel. Like, Eddie George is fantastic.
Yeah. Kitty Cat Jones met Amy Adams Strunk in Buffalo a few years back. That's pretty cool. I met Amy in LA when the Titans played the Rams on that Sunday Night Football game, and actually had a really cool moment where she told me that she loved my videos. So that was pretty nice. I had heard from people in the Titans building that she really, really liked the video I made after the Titans beat the Ravens in that on that 2019 run. I guess it was technically 2020, where I basically played a lot of takes about how the Ravens, you know, national takes, the Ravens are going to easily beat the Titans. They're going to stomp the Titans. And with Another One Bites the Dust as the backing track. That was a fun video. Apparently, Amy really liked that video. So I got to get back into making more videos. So anyway, all right, Justin. Anything else you want to say? Should we end the show? It's up to you. I'll hand the steering wheel over.
No, I think that's going to do it. We're at an hour 15. I will end with this, though. You put it up. I met Hulk Hogan in a subway in the early 90s. He tell you to take your vitamins, brother? What did he do, Rob? That's awesome that you met Hulk Hogan in a subway. Now I'm curious, like a subway or the sandwich subway? I, for some reason, I was first thinking a subway station, but now I think he might mean the sandwich place.
I read that as subway station or on the train itself.
Okay, but me too. But now he said in a subway, so now I feel on the subway, I think, would be the I knew it was the sandwich place.
Wow.
He met, look at that, Hulk Hogan getting the 6-inch sub for his 24-inch pythons. I absolutely love that.
Justin, I'm going to take the steering wheel back just for one last thing I wanted to say, and I forgot. Two news notes, and then we'll end the show. Number one, the NFL has changed roster cutdown day this year, which is actually kind of bonkers to me. It will now be the Sunday night after the last preseason game. It was previously the Tuesday after the last preseason game. So that's two less days the Titans have to evaluate their roster. The Titans play the preseason game on Saturday night. So in less than 24 hours after that game, they got to cut like half the roster almost. That's a big deal. And that I wonder how that impacts. We can talk about this later. I wonder how that impacts the third preseason game, because the third preseason game, it's usually a bunch of guys trying to make the team. But like by that point, they'll have had to have already made most of the decisions. So very interesting. And then second point, a much deserved, quick, I would say fast tracked Hall of Fame, not Hall of Fame, Ring of Honor induction for the late Dave McGinnis. He will be inducted into the franchise's Ring of Honor. Again, very much deserved. Also feels quite fast-tracked.
No-brainer.
And I'm okay with that. I have no problem with it at all. Nobody deserves to be in the Ring of Honor as much as Coach Mack. So happy
what
to
he meant
that.
To the city and the franchise, both as a coach and then later, obviously, as a broadcaster, if you will. No-brainer. Great decision by Amy Adams Strunk. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible podcast. An hour 20. This is outrageous. I can't believe we went for 2 hours, but you guys make it easy, make it fun. Really did not feel like 2 hours when we did 50 earlier today. We did 3 hours of podcasting today. That doesn't even sound realistic to me. We essentially did 3 hours of podcasting today.
We didn't get to 3 hours.
Close. No, I guess not far off though. Two and a bit, but appreciate you guys for tuning in. As always, we'll be back on Monday. Graver and I are going to have to think about what to talk over the weekend. I'm leaning towards talking about the Tennessee Titans probably on Monday's show, but we'll mull it over and maybe there'll be something else, but it's probably going to be about the Titans. Until then, y'all stay safe. Wait for the end of the stream. Leave a comment below, Graver. Said it all to you earlier and it seemed to work pretty decently. Wait till this ends. Leave a comment after the stream ends. Appreciate you all. Stay safe. Tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.